The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Backstory. Let's hear it on Pittsfield Community Radio 89.7, WTBR-FM Pittsfield 88.1, WSBR Lee with Roberta McCulloch-Dews. Thanks for tuning in and Happy New Year. Today, it's so good to be back. I have to say to everyone, it's so good to be back and be with you all. And, you know, today we have just a fabulous guest. Her name is Dr. Nikki Payne. She is a physician and she is founder of Quiescence Med Spa, which is based in the Berkshires. And it's a business that's brought to life from Dr. Payne's medical experience and her passion for whole body rejuvenation. And we're going to get into all of that and what that means. But for now, it's one of the many dreams that Dr. Nikki has seen come true, and she's going to tell us all about her story. And so, Dr. Nikki, thank you first and foremost for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Great. And so I just have to start out. Do you have a preferred title? I'm calling you Dr. Nikki, but you may want to be called Dr. Payne. You may want to be called Nikki. Like, you tell me what you like to be called.
I go by Dr. Nikki. It's okay.
Perfect. Dr. Nikki. Okay. So, you know, first and foremost, I think the most exciting news right now is Quiescence. I'm seeing it all over social media. I'm seeing your passion, your excitement for it. So can you talk a little bit about Quiescence? This is a relatively new business and it has such a beautiful name. So let's talk about that a little bit. What is Quiescence?
Absolutely. So Quiescence, the name itself comes from a blend of two words, the quiet essence of a medical spa. And so it's really building on two of my passions. So obviously I'm a medical physician and I bring that medical piece to it. So it truly is a med spa. My passion is musculoskeletal medicine. So what I've been building is a spa where you can not only go to kind of rebuild, reboot, reboost yourself, which most people tend to think of when they go to a spa anyhow, but also to say, now that we have you feeling good, looking good, I also want to help you move better. So I can assess and see where some of those chronic musculoskeletal overuse type tendonitis and tendinopathies can be holding you back. And then offer that in the setting of a spa.
Wow. That is quite the combination. So who is Quiescence for?
Quiescence is for anybody who really sees the value of needing to prioritize self-care. And that's something even in my primary practice that I've been talking more and more about as of late, not just because I'm opening a spa, but me as a cancer survivor, I really started rethinking what healthcare and self-care meant. And so I bring that into my conversation with my patients all the time. It obviously becomes more pertinent because I have a spa outside. And I do believe that that experience for me really built where I wanted the spa to go.
That's a good point, Dr. Nikki. When you were thinking about the services, did you almost envision yourself as a customer?
I did. I really did. You know, so my passion outside of work has always been to spend my free time in the spa. So I'm either working or doing something related to work, or I'm in the spa. So that's how I would vacation. I would literally take spa vacations. And so I started thinking, what else, if I were in the spa, would I have wanted? What could have been offered? How could I have made this a complete experience? I would always go for something like a hot tub massage, which is my favorite.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you start thinking about re-energizing and rebooting, because we're very busy people, we have a lot of hats that we wear. And sometimes you have very little time to really make yourself feel like you've been rejuvenated. And so I might take a few hours, I might get a facial one day, I might get a massage another day, but I really wanted to come up with a treatment plan that says, okay, not only can we do this, but here's how else I can help you and here's the plan.
So the term med spa is something that is part of our lexicon nowadays, but I don't think it always has been. So when, from your opinion, especially from the medical perspective, when did you see this as becoming an industry that really was one that you could hang your hat on?
That too has been an evolutionary process. I have hired a lot of consultants that have guided me in certain pathways and in some ways educating me in what a med spa truly is and what types of services you need to have in order to call yourself a med spa. So when I first thought about this, I thought that any med spa was a spa that was owned by a medical provider. So that was just how limited my knowledge was in the industry. And then I started learning all the different types of services that should be offered. Things like skincare, the IV hydrations. I don't do IV hydration right now because I'm actually working out of my home, but I do injectables. So those same kind of components that can be compounded into an IV solution. Most of them can also be given as a simple and safe injection. And so that's the
Okay.
service that I'm offering now. You still get the benefit of the supplement itself. It's just a different way to administer it, and it allows me the ability to offer that service to my clients.
Okay. And when we think about when folks first come to you, are they nervous and do they think, am I just gonna sort of just adjust like it's the regular spa treatment? Do they feel like they have to do something different? What is it like for them when they walk through the doors?
And it's a very calming environment, actually. Like I said, I turned a portion of my home into my spa for now until I find a location. But this is my home base for now. And I mean, I use very calming colors, but anyone who knows me, green has always been my favorite color. But it also happens to be a very soothing color, and it's very natural and close to nature. So I kind of really work on that kind of environment and keep it nice and calm. But I never, even just when I'm at work, so I don't approach a person when they come to me and they know that they've been referred to Dr. Payne. That actually is very intimidating for a lot of people. So that's why I go by Dr. Nikki at that point. But I've learned to sit down, talk with you, see what your needs are. So I'm not really here to push my agenda. I'm here to let you know what I can offer based on what your needs are. So that means that each client is going to have an assessment. So the provider assessment, right now I'm the only provider. And we're going to have a sit down. We're going to say, where do you see your needs are? Okay, here's how I can help you. And we don't do it all in one day. We literally devise a treatment plan and say, this is where you can get the best benefit. This is what we should address first. This is where we can take a sample of this type of treatment. And then we just lay it out. And because I am mobile within a certain radius, I actually come to your home, or I can.
So let's put quiescence in the parking lot for a little bit because I call it, it's one of the dreams that you've had. But your first dream, when since you were a teenager, was to become a doctor. And I know you mentioned the thing about the title, and you've earned your title. So it's one of those where you've earned it.
Well, thank
So
you.
definitely, wear it proudly because you put in that work, and there was a lot of work, and that road to medicine was not a straight path. And so I want to go back to your teenage years when you were that young girl, younger girl, right?
you.
And you were having dreams of your future and thinking about what that could look like. The idea of being a doctor, tell me about where that idea came from.
You know, I get asked this question all the time because I do a lot of mentoring and I have over the course of my life. I kind of call it divine intervention because it just seemed like one day I woke up and said, I'm going to be a doctor. And I said it with just such fervence and such like certainty, right? And I was probably maybe 13 or 14 when I really started thinking it. Okay, so I didn't have any doctors in my family that I knew of. The only really exposure, real exposure that I had to medicine was my fascination with medical dramas on television. I mean, I was born in 1973, and I'm not sure what year Quincy MD came.
Quincy MD.
Yes, but I mean, I was like at the TV like this, just enamored. So if
Was
there's
that with the Jack Krugman?
I don't remember his name, but I watched all of those. It was Quincy, it was Trapper John, it was Sunday Elsewhere, ER. I mean, all the way till Grey's Anatomy. So anyone who knows me right now knows that I am hooked on Grey's Anatomy. So there was definitely the television influence, and medicine is nothing like what TV portrays it to be. But that's really my only exposure to what being a doctor would be like. And even with those television shows, excuse me, television shows, you didn't see anyone like me as a doctor. So it wasn't like I had someone to aspire to and say, I'm going to be her.
So, no, go ahead, go ahead.
Most of my activities prior to that were just kind of the typical kind of homemaking type things. Like I'm a seamstress. I've made wedding gowns and formal wear, which I absolutely love to do, and I still do it when I have time. I used to love to bake, and I've always loved animals. So when I decided I was going to be a doctor, there was two pathways. I was either going to be a veterinarian or I was going to be an orthopedic surgeon. So those were the only two pathways. And when I was old enough to get a job in the veterinary specialty, I was a vet tech. And I didn't like it. And I said, well, that settled it. Guess I'm gonna be a surgeon. And it was as simple as that. I pursued it mentally with such precision. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go, you go ahead. I am literally listening to your story and I'm in awe. So please, you finish and then I have a question about that, but please.
You know, it never crossed my mind that I might not make it in. It was just a matter of how long would it take me to get in there and what pathway would I take. And so as I pursued my college pathway, so to speak, if we're going to fast forward from teenager and first job to kind of going away to college, you know, I did the typical biology major because I thought that that's what you had to do. There was no one really guiding me up until this point. I knew I wanted to be a doctor. Doctors are science majors, so you're either going to be a chemistry major or a biology major. Turns out you can be any major you want, as long as you take the classes you need to pass the MCAT. But no one told me that. College was actually quite a struggle for me. When I was in high school, I was in Major Works. I did all the honors classes. You know, I mean, schoolwork came easy. And I mean, it doesn't mean that I didn't put the effort into it, but I absorbed the knowledge and I got the grades. And I thought college was going to be equally as easy. So I went really with the same mindset that, you know, high school was a breeze. You know, I was taking calculus and physics and doing all of this. And my first college experience, I went to the University of Akron in Akron, Ohio. And some kind of way, they put me in a remedial math class, which was demoralizing, but I felt that that was where I was supposed to start. And I didn't really feel like I had an advocate to fight it.
Was that based on your grades?
It shouldn't have been because I was honors. You know, so this was my, you know, it was mind-boggling to me, to be placed there. And then I realized over time that my advisor really didn't advise me at all. So I did struggle on my first year with the coursework, the amount of coursework that was given, the pace that was required, and a lot of the independent study and a lot of distractions. There's a lot of distractions when you go away for the first time. So my first semester really set me up for an uphill battle the entire way. And that also gave fuel to the fire for my pre-med advisor who literally would tell me, I'm never going to make it into medical school.
So if we could think about all of this, because this is such a here in the journey up until this point, you start out as a teen, resolute in your drive, in your passion. You have this idea of yourself. You don't necessarily have those visions of representation around you, but for whatever reason, you have it securely in your mind.
Yes.
Did you have anyone prior to get into college who knew of your vision that you had shared it with?
Yes. I mean, pretty much anyone who knew me, I would speak my vision to anyone who, asked what I plan to do. Because when you get to a certain age or a certain level in high school, everyone kind of starts asking the question, so what are you going to do? And I kind of breezed over undergrad, like, well, I'm going to be a doctor, but there's several years before you get there. And so pretty much anyone who knew me knew not only that I was planning on being a doctor, but that I was going to be an orthopedic surgeon.
Did they believe you could do it?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Sometimes it was more the silence that said more than either. I would almost appreciate if you would say, that's nice, sweetie, but just whatever. That I didn't know how to deal with, right? That just kind of says, okay, watch me. That brings a certain kind of spirit. But it's the person that silently says, and they give you the look like, all right, and I don't. So that one was a little interesting because you can sometimes feel that not disapproval, but I'm blanking on another word to use, but
They're basically not affirming your vision, and so it's like they don't believe you.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I was always that person that silently says, I just kind of get that confidence smile that says, watch me, because I know what God can do. I've always been a woman of faith. I was raised in the church by my grandmother, and we were the family that would go to Sunday school, then service, and you go home to eat. And for some odd reason, you ended up back in church in the evening. I don't know, it was Sunday school, being for church, right? Back in the day. And so, that's kind of how I grew up, and that's what was instilled in me. And I just remember watching my grandmother and how fervently she prayed for everyone. She was definitely a woman of faith. And I didn't realize how strong of a foundation she was actually instilling, and it was really more observational. And I think that goes to show the power of just having someone like that in your environment, in your surrounding, that can shape you in ways you could never really see or foresee, I should say.
So we have grandmother's prayers, her strong foundation that is sealed within you. Now we're at the University of Akron, and they have put you in this remedial class, and you also are going to, in your journey, join and meet up with advisors who don't believe you can do it. So, as you're traversing now this path where everything around you is saying you don't have what it takes, you can't do it, and guess what? We're not going to support you. How did you harness that fire within to manifest itself to make you keep going?
Part of it was learning how to play the game. And so, and in that, it really fueled a passion in me to actually create a panel of speakers who had similar experiences. So, for the next 10 years or so, I had a panel of speakers called Listen and Learn. And we would all speak on our different experiences, which were somehow the same, different story, but the same as far as our experiences. And it was a panel of college educated or in the process of being educated. And we would go back and talk to our high school students about this is what I experienced. This is what no one told me. And so that was a tremendous support system from that standpoint. When I finally learned to play the game, because you're assigned an advisor, and I couldn't switch because there were only pre-med advisors. But my advisor kept telling me, you're not going to make it into medical school. You should pick another career, another degree. And I actually did. I switched to surgical assisting because I said, well, let me select something that if by chance I don't make it in to medical school, I need a degree that I can actually use to get a job. Because if I pursue biology and I don't get into medical school, I honestly did not know what else I could possibly do with a biology degree. Now, there's actually a lot you can do with a biology degree, but I was so laser focused. So I said, I'm either going to be a doctor or a marine biologist. I don't know. Those were the only two things. Young person thinking this stuff. And so I switched. And it wasn't until I switched that my advisor was like, okay, now you're listening. And he would actually show up for meetings that he set up with me.
Oh no.
He literally would not be there. There would be return in 15 minutes. So I would wait the 15 minutes and he just wouldn't show up.
He set you up.
He did. He did. But he didn't break me down here. And so I said, all right. When I decided I was going to go to medical school, I didn't think it'd be easy. I didn't know how it was going to happen. I just knew it was going to happen. And so what becoming a surgical assistant or a surgical technician did is it got me in the arena. It put me inside the Cleveland Clinic in front of doctors who said, I will write you a letter of recommendation. I would do this. It beefed up my resume. It gave me real life exposure. So now I was no longer the person that says, I want to be a doctor because I want to help people. And it wasn't just, it was like, well, I want to be a doctor in here. Let me tell you how I've been in the trenches. Okay, so let me tell you, because I could shadow people. I'm working in surgery. I'm now balancing a career and going back to school. And excuse me, I'm going to get a little water and going back to school to finish my degree. So I did finish the biology degree. At the end of, I don't know, say 8 years, I ended up with two degrees from two different universities. And the importance of switching universities is there's this thing called tabula rasa, meaning you get a clean slate. So you can transfer your grades, your GPA, all the good ones to your new university. Okay? So that uphill struggle that I had at the University of Akron was left behind with graduation. All right? Because when I changed my major, now that GPA is different than what I was struggling with. Okay, so that was me learning how to play the game that nobody told me how to play.
But in many respects, this advisor, really thought that this person had a plan to, keep you sort of in a box, right? And I know that especially when you're in your 20s or even, your teens, right? And when you're in school, it's really hard to understand the motives of why people do certain things. I think that, oftentimes when people don't have a point of reference to lean into, it's really hard to expand their mind to understand that whatever is within their confined box of thinking is so limited. And so perhaps the image of you as a doctor did not line up inside that small box. So it was way too big for him. And so, but the plan that was set up for you actually turned out to be your greatest asset. And in terms of setting you on a path, and isn't that the case when we think about just the things that people go through oftentimes in life?
Absolutely.
The very thing that you think actually is going to railroad you and take you off course or just really diminish your dream, it's actually something that can help to stoke the fire.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this advisor, oftentimes folks would say, well, did you go back and kind of rub it in his face and say, here? And I was like, I didn't do this for him. I did this for me. This was my goal. And I'm a staunch believer in that, God doesn't make any mistakes. He did use that experience. So when people are leaning on me, whether I'm being their advisor or their mentor or just a friend, just in life, you're going to get thrown curveballs. But I believe that every curveball is usable. Okay. I'm going to make an attempt to do a sports analogy here, but every experience that we have is either guiding you away from something that you were steering towards. And this is really, I'm kind of a black and white thinker, or toward something that you weren't going, that God really wanted you to get there. Okay. So it's almost like in my mind's eye, kind of a game of chess, and we're the pawns, and God's like, okay, let me help her, let me put her over here. She's doing something stupid, just whatever it is. And so I never really looked at the advisor as the gatekeeper that he thought that he was. I really just said, we're going to take the curve. We're going to get a degree that will help me. I thought it was really the backup degree. but it got me in the door at the Cleveland Clinic. And once I got back home to Cleveland, I went to a better university that I could now afford because I was going part-time. I was working. Cleveland Clinic paid part of it. I had real-life work experience. A better university with a better reputation when med schools come around and do their, not recruiting, but basically when they're doing their interactions and patients. Thank you. And then my advisors in that setting, my grades were phenomenal, you know, because now I learned how to be a student. I learned how to conquer these classes and just say, okay, well, I am no longer on this natural short 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of med school, and then whatever else. So I'm already on like year six. So it took me 8 years to get 2 degrees. And I got into medical school on my first try.
Was it your
That was
first pick? Was that your what your medical school choice? Was it your first?
you know, sometimes you can't be picky. But ironically, when I went to interview at the Medical College of Ohio, which is what it was called at that time, it's changed names 3 times, I think, over the past 30 years. But it was called Medical College of Ohio. And I think it's just so poetic that my dream to become a doctor was revealed to me through a recurring dream of a bridge. It was a rusty bridge that I had never seen before in my life. And I would just have, it wasn't something I had every night, but it was something I would wake up and say, why am I dreaming of this? Because it re would recur at such a frequency that you remember it. And so as we're driving around, you know, I'm in the car and I'm like, okay, well, there's the, you know, the bridge for the regular train, and there's this. I never knew why I had this dream. So fast forwarding to us driving to my interview at the Medical College of Ohio. Right before we got off our exit 59, there was the bridge I had been dreaming
No
of for years.
way. No way.
I am serious. I knew when I saw that that was my confirmation. And it was so poetic that my dream to become a doctor was revealed to me by dreaming about that bridge my entire life.
Isn't it amazing that oh my
It's
goodness,
by
it's so
intervention.
amazing.
Honestly, I mean, I get chills when I tell that story. I had to like really try to keep from swelling up a little bit with it.
Because it was
Because
for you, Dr.
it
Nikki. It
was.
was for you.
It really was. And I know there's a lot of people that kind of roll their eyes when I kind of start talking about this recurring dream and they're like, okay, here we go. Now I knew she was
No,
gonna go deep in.
no.
But that was really my experience. And
I
so
believe your experience.
yeah. And so I feel that that college picked me. And when I met with the people who interview you, so you can have hostile interviews, you know. There was another college that I interviewed at that was much closer to home and it shall remain nameless. But they were very, I don't know the word that I want to use here because hoity-toity isn't really the best word to use, but it's just the one that comes to my mind right now. They are an excellent university and they have an excellent name, so there's nothing wrong with them, but just the feeling. And I'm a person that really just goes on that feeling and that interaction that I get and says, okay, this is a good interaction. This is a place for me. This is where I feel like I belong. I would have been a great doctor no matter which university I went to. I'm looking for the what's my day-to-day experience going to be? And part of that may be just because of the experiences I've had. And two, how difficult medical school is going to be. I don't want it to just be this really remote, robotic type experience. I wanted the interpersonal interactions, you know, because I'm kind of a bubbly person, you know,
You are.
and I need that kind of surrounding. Now, I had my level of confidence, and I remember one of my good friends, we went to med school, we met in med school, and we had one of those just real adult type conversations that was kind of in hindsight. And she said that when she first saw me, she really just thought that I was going to be the type of person that just thought I was just, you know, it. We'll just leave it at that. Said, your level of confidence, and she said, I just looked at you and I wished I had that level. She was like, I just felt like everything was such a struggle for me. And then I saw you, and my first thought was, You know how we can be, right?
Yeah.
So she said, that was my first thought. Now here it is 20, about 20 some odd years later, and we're still very good friends. And so it wasn't until years into our friendship that she told me that that was her first thought. But what I emitted was this bubbly person, but this confident and not egotistical, you know.
Right.
So there's a way to bring your confidence and bring your personality without putting other people down. Like I don't need
100%.
Right. You know, like I don't need to make person X feel like they're not going to make it in order for me to feel like I will.
Well, that's insecurity. So
Exactly.
that if you're truly confident with yourself, you don't need to put anyone else down, right?
Right.
It's truly the small person that is that knows that they don't either, I don't know, in their minds, maybe they feel like they don't have X, Y, and Z or whatever, but it's projection, right? So insecurity, a lot of it is projection, and true confidence is quiet. True confidence doesn't need to be shouted from the rooftops. True confidence, you embody that, but you're also able to bring other people along with you and also invite people in. And it's something that oftentimes, confidence can sometimes get a bad rap because it's not described the proper way. Confidence
Right.
really is not, it's not a label that is something that someone has to say, well, I'm not really a confident person. No, it's okay to be confident. It's okay to believe in yourself, but that doesn't mean you're taking away from someone else.
Exactly. And it's ironic that a lot, oftentimes people feel they need permission
Absolutely.
to feel confident, you know, to
Yes.
be self-confident. And yes, so I mean that's a whole different topic in and of itself. It's actually one of the things that that I'm writing about in my book, and it's about insecurities.
Well, Dr. Nikki, you hold that thought because we're going to take a quick 30-second break and we're going to be right back.
Absolutely.
You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee. Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Ron, where are you?
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
WTBR.
Hi, everyone. So for my listeners just tuning in, our guest today is Dr. Nikki Payne. She is a physician and she is the founder of Quiescence Med Spa. And if you missed the first half of our conversation, we were basically just getting into, basically more learning more about her med spa, but also her journey as a licensed medical doctor. And Dr. Nikki was taking us on that path from when she first had that vision to being a doctor to, the road to medicine, which was not easy. And it wasn't a straight path. She had a couple of twists and turns, but from it, she gained a lot. And, when we think about, Dr. Nikki, that time, that of learning, preparation, training, what are some of the key memories that stand out to you that you reflect on even today?
You know, when I think about the path, I think the things that stick out the most for me are the hardships that I had to overcome. You know, oftentimes when you think of the memories, you think, I'm going to pull out this beautiful moment, this, and that. And it wasn't hardships the entire way. You know, I'm not trying to paint that picture. There were definitely great moments. And I've met a lot of great people along the way. But I think the things that stick out in my memory the most are when you've had an obstacle that would have derailed most people. And I pursued or persevered, I should say, and found a way through. Because when hindsight is like, okay, I could have let that stop me, but, and I usually say, but God, from that standpoint. So one, just having just the resilience to stick to it. You know, when I mentor folks and they start analyzing, well, I would want to be a doctor, but, and then whatever follows but. And one of the biggest things is the duration of time it takes to achieve the degree. And so if it were the straightforward course, I mean, you're looking at least 8 years before you can call yourself a doctor. And even at that 8 year mark, you're just walking off the stage with your degree. You're not able to go out and practice without your residency training. Now, we practice medicine in residency training, but there's still another 3 to as much as 8 years of residency training, depending on your specialty. And so one, just overcoming the duration of the journey.
When you think about the time that it took, it's a sacrifice. And, you know, that's a chunk of your life, right? That you say, I could have done X, Y, and Z. I could have done this. And you dedicated that time to being a doctor. Do you ever look back? Were there other things that you ever wanted to fill that time with?
I mean, I think the biggest sacrifice that I feel that I have made is really in my personal life. Because when I was younger and my friends were going out and having fun, I really couldn't do that, you know? And then just as far as like, well, anyone who knows me, they know that I'm single. So, I mean, there's a sacrifice from that standpoint. And not every doctor sacrifices completely where they're single and they don't have a family and don't have kids. It can be done. But for me, I felt that it was one of the things that was sacrificed. And initially, my mindset was, I'm married to medicine. And I even jokingly say that now. I guess technically I am married to it. But it was just a mindset change where I dated, just like everyone else dated. But I remember thinking that you're either with me on this journey or you're against me. And as a very black and white kind of thinker, if there was anything in the relationship that caused or seemed like it was going to cause more stress than I felt it should have, I was very easily able to quickly release. And so for me, because the goal, I stayed laser focused on the goal, almost to a fault. I achieved it. But I never really allowed myself to get too heavily involved in developing the personal relationships. So for me, that was a tremendous sacrifice. And not everybody makes that sacrifice. Most of my friends are married. Most of them met their husbands either before they got to med school or in med school or something of that nature. So, I mean, I think that was more a me thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh, hey, if you go into medicine, you're not going to be able to have a family. So I don't want that to be the message, but it was my sacrifice.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you for that, you know, and thank you for, being, sharing and being vulnerable there. I definitely appreciate that. And I think those who listen to your story will appreciate that because there are trade-offs. You know, I think it's sometimes when you've reached the goal and you look hindsight can look quite rosy sometimes. But there were choices along the way that said, well, if I do this, I can't do that. Or if I go here, I'm not going to have time to do this. So it was always a constant state of negotiation. You know, I think to myself, you know, after you have now walked down this long and arduous road and you have gotten to the end and your hard work and effort finally culminated in not just that white coat, but being fully credentialed. How did it feel to put on that white coat every day and live out your dream as a practicing physician?
You know, it's almost indescribable. Just to have overcome so much and to be here in spite of everyone who tried to stand in the way. Also, I feel the weight in a good way of those who are watching me and saying, hey, now I see somebody who looks like me doing something that I never thought that I could do. So I take a lot of pride in that. And it was just such a humbling experience that someone comes to me with their problems and they're looking to me for guidance. And it's they don't know me. You know, they don't know me from anybody else. You know, that, you know, when they get referred to Dr. Payne, you know, now I'm a subspecialist at this point. So I do sports medicine and musculoskeletal care. I don't do critical care at this point. But still, people have choices and they're choosing me. There are times when I see patients and we have a conversation and I say, well, I'm sorry, but that's not something that falls within my wheelhouse. But here's where I see I can help you.
Yeah.
After someone comes to me, oftentimes they will say something along this line of, that's the first time I felt like my doctor heard me. And for me, that is something I bring with much pride. I can't help everybody with everything that they bring to me, but I can hear you and say, here's where I see you need to go, or here's where the pathway is, or here's why. So my consultations in my normal day-to-day clinic is always very educational. And oftentimes I'm explaining things where patients have otherwise felt dismissed, or maybe they didn't understand something that a doctor said to them. And they say, well, I have pain and this person takes care of pain, or this surgery should take care of it. Why am I not a candidate? So I have this ability to fill in the gaps where maybe a short verbiage coming from the physician side and what's heard on the patient side, oftentimes there's a big gap.
Yeah.
My biggest memory that always brings a smile to my face, and it almost nearly floored me, is when I was a new resident. And no, actually, I was still a student and I was rotating through. And this was my first exposure to physical medicine and rehabilitation. At that time, I still was on the mindset of becoming a surgeon, right? And so there's always this stereotypical mindset of a surgeon. And I did have some of those from that standpoint. But I remember this, a Black family, and the person was probably younger than I was at that time, and they had had a stroke. The person had had a stroke. And I remember being with my resident, my rounding resident, who was a foreigner, and he had a certain abruptness to the way he spoke. Okay. And it was a cultural thing. It wasn't that he was not trying to disrespect them by any
means. Right. That was just the way his style, his conversation style.
Exactly. Okay. And so I remember them coming out telling us that the person was unresponsive. Now, to a medical provider, unresponsive means, hey, drop everything, stop, you know, maybe we need to call a code, maybe we need to do this. So it means something different to us than it does to, say, a person saying it. Okay. So the person, the family member might say, hey, I'm talking to her and she's not responding. But that's not medical critical care, unresponsive. So, of course, we ran to the room. Okay. And the person was sitting there staring out the window. And... And in his really quick, crass, you know, assessment, he did this. And she kind of looked like, what are you doing? And he walked out in disgust, saying, she's not unresponsive. But what I saw was how that quick assessment, now truly she was not unresponsive, but what I saw was how that communication style affected that family. And that
do you think they checked out? Do you think she checked out, or
she may have been depressed? She could have been in deep thought. She could have been, you know. So I wasn't privy to the conversation that made them say, "Hey, she's unresponsive."
Mm.
She may have been intentionally tuning them out. I don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
What followed that was the explanation of, one, the definition of unresponsiveness to a provider. Okay. Two, yes. He stepped into the room and he snapped his fingers, but the fact that she was irritated and annoyed by it means that she's aware of her surroundings. So it really was a clinical assessment. And we were able to go back to doing what we're doing. But the fact that he didn't take the time to explain that.
Right.
Then my character, it was almost like God was like, this is who you're meant to be.
Right. So you saw something in real time that that basically showed you, it was your example of what not to do and what to do.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. I'm sure you have so many of those stories. That's going to go in your book.
Well, and hopefully, the book is about something a little different.
Okay.
One of the major transitions in my life, because when I was a teenager, anyone who knew me and all of my medical student friends knew I was going to be an orthopedic surgeon. And my level of confidence as far as becoming that surgeon was so high, it was here, right? That I literally looked up who the head of the orthopedic department was as a first-year medical student.
Yeah.
Stopped him and his entourage on rounds, introduced myself as a first-year medical student and soon to be his resident in 4 years. That
Wow.
was how confident I was.
Wow. Wow.
But let me tell you what changed me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not a surgeon, and I am very happy in what I do.
So what happened?
I'm exactly the kind of doctor that I said I wanted to be, minus the title of surgeon. So I wanted to be a musculoskeletal specialist. And the reason I chose that as this young child is that, you know, I'm looking at these different professions, and my vision of what, say, a neurosurgeon did was sewing nerves together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a seamstress. I know what it's like to sew two pieces of material together. I was like, I can't fathom sewing nerves together. That would just annoy me. Nope,
right.
That one's out. So it
right.
was this thing. So fast forward to, I chose this. I want to be a musculoskeletal specialist. Now I'm in my first year internship as a surgery intern. And so for the first time, someone's calling me doctor, and I'm the one that has to run and respond, and I can't look and say, oh, it's me, right? What I found out about myself in that year was a game changer, okay? And so I found that I really didn't have that drive that my other colleagues had to get to the OR. You know, they would be mm-hmm. so excited if they could do the most minute, you know, maybe they were moving a skin tag or doing an appendix, which actually is a big surgery. But I didn't have that drive. I was like, I worked in surgery for 5 years. I've done traumas. I've done neurosurgery. Yeah, all right. What I found for me was listening to that person in the room. I had the ability or the gift to see the person that no other surgeon on round saw. If your loved one is in the hospital for surgery, they're critically ill, whatever it is, you know that family member will come in and zero dark 30. They're going to get there as early as the hospital will let them in. They will sit at that bedside all day just for the hopes of talking to that surgeon to get some answers because they're scared.
Yeah.
They see us coming if they're fortunate enough to be there when we round. And you can see them sit on edge like, okay, we're going to get some answers now. But as a team, we're coming in and this is how our conversation goes professionally. This is patient is a 34-year-old African-American female, post-op day number 3, status post, and then we're saying the surgery. It's very technical because that's how we think. We're very robotic. We need to know the facts. I need to know if I need to act. Okay, so it's a very precise moment. And maybe there's a teaching moment, maybe there isn't, but as you're moving through, because you have to see X number of patients before your surgery starts at 7. So there's no time to really address that person that's been waiting to talk to you. But I could see that person and I could see the shoulders drop when they were like, I didn't get any answers or I didn't even feel like I could interject. And so who's at the bedside with the patients all day? The nurses. Who's being asked all the questions? The nurses. Who answers the call? The interns.
Yeah.
So what I would tell them is tell that person, I might not know the answer because I'm an intern, but you tell them that I will make it my point to hear their question and take it to the team and present it in the way that we talk.
Yes.
Okay. And that way I still had to give it to the nurse who had to give it to them. But now the patient knows not only can they leave the bedside and go to the bathroom, they can get something to eat. They can maybe work a full day because there was no possible way they were going to see the surgical team anyway. You know, so it was just a level of freedom for the family members to know that there was somebody on the team that saw them.
Yeah.
And for me, that was more gratifying than anything I did in the OR.
That became your why.
That was my why. Yeah. And that was the game changer for me. So when we did we would do these resident retreats and they do these little mini personality tests, you know, it's called something. And so I remember taking this test and it was supposed to be anonymous. And as they were reviewing the results, there was a lot of, and just kind of like, do you see this? And they made the comment that said, somebody here is not a surgeon. Not in a bad way, you know, because it was almost like, if that person is a surgeon, they're going to be the most phenomenal surgeon ever. At least that's what I heard. But it was more like, somebody that this doesn't is too far askew from the normal numbers, from the normal this. So we go through our year. There's lots of moments like that that's revealing to me who I am, that I got so much more gratification from being that person at the bedside who was alleviating, meeting the person when they're at their most catastrophic time in life.
Yeah.
And being that bridge between that and the family, that it made me think back to that moment when I saw that resident dismiss that patient and I explained what's going on. Mm. And I think that's my role. That's the physician that I'm going to be.
I love that story so much, because we hear a lot today about just that visibility. I mean, patient care, you know, when we think of quality patient care, that's what every patient truly desires, to be heard. And when you are in your most vulnerable state, right, you at that point don't have the power. It's not shifted toward you, right? It's those who are charged with your care. And so it is one of the most, you know, I know many people have many different reasons as to why they go into the medical profession in on different levels, but it truly is a profession that really requires, you know, an understanding at a basic level of care and compassion. Yes. You should. I'm just going to say that one more time. You should kind of have those two things there, you know, because that's what people need the most, right? They need that. You're terrified when you are, you know, if you've ever had to, you know, be in a hospital as a patient, it is the most terrifying thing and loneliest thing too. You feel so alone. Absolutely. And so to know that you wanted to embody that care and compassion, Dr. Nikki, I think is truly, it's a noble thing. And we need more physicians like you and people who are in the profession, because that would just make it a better place for all of those who have to enter hospitals in their most scariest and vulnerable states. You know, I know I'm looking at the hour, and there are so many different things that, you know, I think we have time for maybe two more questions, you know, just thinking about it. But, you know, obviously you lived out your dream. You're living your dream. You added the dream of quiescence on top of this noble work that you get the opportunity to do because of the investment that you made in yourself. You know, one of the things I want to know is that when you think about bringing quiescence to life, you're now adding a new profession, that of entrepreneur, to your credentials, right? And yes. So what are you most proud of when you think about how you have brought this idea to bear?
Overcoming fear. Oftentimes, especially with something like becoming an entrepreneur, we're not taught how to run businesses in medicine. There's so much else to learn that you just get out there and you do what you're taught to do. And there's someone who runs the business of medicine and you just fit into a box. Mm. So as I learned more about what it takes to open a business and what kind of regulations and how that shaped my ideas and how I wanted to bring things together. I mean, I'm literally working behind the scenes and reading books and taking seminars and doing webinars. And, you know, so just my biggest thing I have to tell myself is to do it afraid. Mm. Because if I waited until I felt like I was ready for this task, I would never open. Now, I've been thinking of quiescence, and I didn't know the name, for over 30 years. You know, as a matter of fact, if I never made it into med school, I would have pursued becoming a massage therapist and still found myself in the spa arena. So I, you know, always wanted to own a spa. Mm. But I was afraid to step out there on my own. I was afraid to be vulnerable. I was afraid to create something that was like no one else's spa. you know. So even with my consultants, they tell me that, well, if you want to own a med spa, you must do it this way or you will not survive, you know. And so just really doing it afraid.
I love that. And let's just make that the mantra. We have a friend, a family friend who that's her mantra, do it afraid. And she actually has some branded merch with that. And I just love it because I think that it is the mantra for the year ahead. There are so many things that we don't know, but if we just do it afraid, if we just say, in spite of how we feel, take that next step, do that thing that makes you most uncomfortable, because you just might surprise yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next thing you know, you're a doctor and a business owner.
Oh my God. Do you ever keep a picture of your younger self somewhere? Like, and do you ever look at it and say, look what we've done? Like, it's so full circle.
I don't have one like on display, but you know, of course, if you look back either on your phone, because everything's digital now, if you just look back, like I literally found the picture book, you know, the photo album. And I was like, oh my God, you know, just to see myself back in med school. You know, or in high school or as a cheerleader or just whatever it was. So yes. I absolutely look back and say, wow.
Well, you have lots to be proud of. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot happening for Quiescence in the months ahead. How can folks stay connected to you and what's happening with the med spa?
So right now I do have a website that's out there called Quiescence, medspawellnesscenter.com. It's quite a long name, but there's a tab there where you can fill out the contact information. I don't have my booking link on there yet because the website is still in evolution. And I just got control of the website, but you can certainly fill out the contact form and let me know your interest. And then I can call you or contact you and book you for your services of interest.
Perfect. And if you had to choose one word to describe you, Dr. Nikki, what would that be?
Christian.
Okay. Okay. I like it. Good for you.
It embodies so much when you think of that, and not in the, you know, holier than thou type of sense of the word, but, you know, just in the things that we've talked about and how God has led me. You know, anyone who knows me knows that I'm going to fall back on my faith.
Yeah.
And when I used to have my business cards when I was younger, the first word on there was Christian, Black physician.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're that person looking for a physician, and I've heard people say this, oh, you know, I want a psychiatrist, but I want a Black one. And I want someone. And so we're usually not putting that on our business. But years ago, I was like, this is how I want to be identified. Okay, I'm Christian first, because without that, I would always be Black. But I could not be the physician, right? So in my mind, the hierarchy is Christian first.
Yes.
And even just talking or doing rounds, if someone said I have chest pain, that's the thing that stops rounds. For me, if someone in the corner said pray for me, that literally stopped me in my tracks. Mm. I could not ignore that request.
Mm.
So, Christian.
Okay. Well, you have the final word, and I thank you for it. And I thank you, Dr. Nikki, for just being open and sharing your journey of faith and resilience and lots of vision and passion for what you want out of life. You took all of those ingredients and you made it into something truly, truly wonderful. And you are actually able to now sit and enjoy the fruits of all of that. So well done to you. I know Quiescence is going to be absolutely amazing. And I know that so many good things are in store for your business. So I wish you all the best. And there's so much that we didn't say. So we may have to have you back on the show for part two, because, you know, there are so many other things that you're involved in, and there's mentorship. And so there's so many things that I think we can touch on, but we'll save that for the next show. How about that?
Absolutely. And just thank you for inviting me to tell my story and to just speak my truth and just to let people know who Dr. Nikki really is. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Nikki. And for my guests who have been listening to Backstory, let's hear it on WTBR FM Pittsfield. This is Roberta McCulloch-Dews. I hope you have a wonderful day, and thank you.